From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Brazil's President Dilma Rousseff had a chance to face her accusers more than 3 months after she was suspended from office pending an impeachment trial.
I've come to look into Your Excellency's eyes and say with the serenity of someone who has nothing to hide that I did not commit any crime of responsibility. I did not commit the crimes of which I'm unfairly and arbitrarily accused.
Press TV's Hassan Tavakoli has more.
Rousseff was speaking before the Senate, where she was defending herself at her impeachment trial. She told Brazilian lawmakers that the allegations leveled against her have no merit. The leftist leader stressed that at every moment she's followed the Constitution and done what is best for the country. Rousseff added that Brazil's democracy is being put at risk to protect, quote, the economic elite. The 68-year-old added that she was re-elected in 2014 by 54 million voters. Meanwhile, hundreds of her supporters have rallied outside the Senate in a show of solidarity with Rousseff.
The next step is popular resistance, because what the senators that support the impeachment want is an indirect election with 54 senators to remove a president that was elected by 54 million people. So, the only thing that we can do is wait for people to understand this reality to remove this coup government, like what already happened in other countries like Egypt.
Rousseff is accused of spending funds without congressional approval and manipulating government accounts. Brazilian senators are expected to vote in favor of her permanent removal. However, a senator from her party says she could survive, as half of the senators have not yet declared their allegiance.
Italy's Coast Guard reports that it rescued 6,500 refugees off the coast of Libya. Press TV's Waqar Rizvi has more.
The Italian Coast Guard says about 6,500 refugees were saved off of Libya in one day. Officials say the command center coordinated 40 rescue operations during the day. Vessels from Italy, humanitarian organizations, and EU's border agency Frontex took part in the rescue operations. A day before, about 1,100 refugees were rescued in the same area. According to the UN Refugee Agency, around 110,000 asylum seekers have arrived in Italy this year so far. During the same period, more than 3,000 refugees lost their lives while trying to reach Greece or Italy. This is 50% more than the number for the same period last year.
Iraqi forces reported finding an ISIS training camp near the border with Jordan. Press TV's Bardi Ahonardar has more.
The Iraqi army found weapons and equipment needed to manufacture explosive devices. The camp was located near the town of Rutba. Iraqi forces took control of the town from Daesh terrorists last May. Rutba was captured by ISIL in June 2014, shortly after Mosul fell. It has long been a base for smuggling and militancy, and it had been a stronghold of al-Qaeda in the past.
Our earlier reports of the demise of the proposed TTIP trade agreement with Europe may have been premature. There's this warning from William Warren, a senior trade analyst with Friends of the Earth. Speaking with RT America's Anya Parampil, Warren said,
"There's no question that there are outrageous American demands being made on Europeans. And there's no question that there's been a massive public uprising against that. When Angela Merkel and Obama met in Hanover a few months ago, there may have been 90,000 people in the streets. And this is relatively staid Germany and so forth. And the opposition is overwhelming. Now, as far as Sigmar Gabriel goes, I think he's a crafty politician. And when he opined that TTIP was dead, or at least in serious trouble, then he was urging the passage of the EU-Canada trade agreement, which is almost just as bad. I mean, there's not much to recommend it. So, I have a sense that he may just want to quiet down the outrage about TTIP, about the US-EU agreement, by convincing people that it's not going anywhere. And of course, he could be setting up a bait and switch or a dirty trick where they'll pop it sometimes later after the movement has gone away. So, I don't think that we can let up one little bit on this agreement. It's a direct threat to Europe.
And today, as part of our continuing coverage of the 2016 presidential election, we speak with one former presidential candidate and a sixth-term member of the U.S. House of Representatives, Cynthia McKinney. I guess what we could do is start with what policy has been discussed to the extent that there has been a discussion of policy in the campaign and where these candidates stand on it, and then maybe look at how it's being portrayed or not mentioned in the media.
Well, I guess I would start with the pronouncements of Mr. Trump, who has made a lot of policy pronouncements, but the advocated policy has not really resonated in the media. I'm not going to say it hasn't resonated with the people, but it hasn't resonated with the media. And that's because you've got Donald Trump saying things like the Europeans need to pay for NATO. We need to stop all of the bad trade deals. He's talked about stopping the wars. So you've got this kind of discussion coming from a presidential candidate, now a presidential nominee, that I don't think the people of the U.S. have heard discussions like in the last 50 years, talking about stopping NATO and having Europeans pay for NATO. We haven't had that kind of a discussion since the inauguration of NATO. But some of us, like me, have been saying for a long time that NATO had become an anachronism. And so I'm glad to be in the company of other people who believe the same thing. At the same time, I think we also need to look at what the, what the stake is that average ordinary folks have in the current, what I call, deep state power configuration. And my position is that we the people don't have any stake whatsoever in the continuation of the current deep state power configuration. I believe that over the past few years, that configuration, that power configuration, has changed hands. And so now we have, instead of that deep state power configuration, say, of two generations ago, now we have one that is much more greedy and much more ruthless in pursuit of its own pecuniary objectives. So with that having been said, what is it that we can do to derive as much political leverage as we can out of these contradictions that are manifesting themselves inside this new deep state power configuration? So, I guess maybe finally to conclude, once we understand that we the people have no stake in the continuation of the current deep state power configuration inside the U.S., then what is it that we ought to do in order to achieve our objective, which would be staking out territory that allows us to thrive and them to not thrive? So anyway, what I've come up with is this idea that what we need to introduce into the system to the best that we can is what I would call systemic anarchy. And so that means that nothing really should work for them, and that everything that we do should be geared toward making creating this systemic anarchy, so that whatever is created out of the ruins of the current political system is something that reflects or can reflect our needs and our values and our policy positions. So what I've come up with as the best way to introduce this systemic anarchy is for everyone to behave politically in an ABC fashion. ABC meaning anybody but Clinton. Now, those who are familiar with my history, they know that the Republicans and the Democrats back in 2002 ran an ABC campaign that was quite successful. And that ABC campaign was anybody but Cynthia. And the Democrats and Republicans went to extreme measures in order to make sure that I did not win my bid for re-election in 2002. Well, you know, I have to admit it was a darn good strategy. And as the history books inform us, it worked. So why not let us take this ABC strategy or variation thereof and use it for our own benefit? So that's why I think the ABC strategy, anybody but Clinton, is a strategy that could work for us. The voters, under no circumstance, vote for Hillary Clinton, but in any circumstance, vote for Green Party nominee, the Constitution Party nominee, the Libertarian Party nominee, and any other political party. But I guess we should rank them. And so most immediately what we would want is the Libertarian Party and the Green Party to get the 5% so that they could become major parties inside the political infrastructure. And then after that, you would get the Independence Party, the Constitution Party, the Party for Socialism and Liberation, and even the Peace and Freedom Party, which right now is only confined to one state. But that state is a big state, California. So then you could elevate those other political parties. So I think that introducing this kind of systemic anarchy where we end up with multiple political parties would be the best solution for us at this time of uncertainty. And I think it's possible if voters will just do anything but vote for Hillary Clinton.
You know, there's an awful lot in there. The first thing is, when you were talking about the idea of creating this anarchy, it sounded almost exactly like the concept behind the quote of Mario Savio, basically, you know, saying, put your body to the gears and make the gears stop turning. What you're saying is essentially the political system is our opponent, crash it. And then in the aftermath, hopefully there'll be these multiple points of gathering, a reconfiguration that allows us to have our policy wants and needs expressed.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And I think it's possible because we've got the Republican Party has made a modest transformation because all of the quote-unquote establishment Republicans have left that party and have fled to Hillary Clinton. So there has been a realignment in that regard. We have not seen a realignment take place within the Democratic Party or among those people who classify themselves as Democrats because Bernie Sanders refused to do to the Democratic Party what Donald Trump was willing to do to the Republican Party. And so therefore, now what we've got to do is crash the Democratic Party. And I think it's so clear to me, and you know, I'd love to get some feedback from you because I can't see any reason that any voter who is on the periphery of Hillary Clinton's power, is particularly black voters, would support Hillary Clinton. And so I make the caveat peripheral to Hillary's power, because we know that those people who are directly being fed by the Democratic Party are the ones who are going to be fed by a Hillary Clinton presidency. But everybody else is going to be a loser. And so the rational behavior would be for everybody else who's going to be a loser to abandon the party. But now guess what I found in reviewing the research? And that is that the least informed voters are the most loyal to a political party that has abandoned them. Let me repeat that.
Yeah.
The least informed political voters are the ones who are most loyal to a political party that has abandoned their preferred policies and their values. So the media are performing a service to that new U.S. deep state power configuration when it fails to inform the public on policy considerations of the nominees and instead focuses on where their clothes are made, what they're wearing, and you know, who's got bags under their eyes and who's got fake hair.
Yeah. I want to also go back to the ABCs, and particularly the one you invoked from 2002, because that bears on the question of who's going to get what going forward. You lost that election November of 2002, about a month after you voted against the Iraq War and stood strongly against it. The following day after your vote against it, Hillary Clinton voted for it and made a statement of very strong support for it, even as she equivocated on the basis of it. You were rewarded with being turned out, and then you came back 2 years later, and 11 years ago, after Katrina, after it devastated the black population, particularly of New Orleans, you were the only member of Congress, a Democratic House, as a matter of fact, that went to hearings and participated in hearings investigating what happened. And Hillary Clinton was nowhere to be found.
Yeah, you're right. Hillary was nowhere to be found, which, you know, if you just look at the coalition of unpunished banksters and war criminals and torturers that are now supporting Hillary Clinton, I think it should be clear to everyone that she is a walking state crime against democracy. And no one in their right mind should place her in the presidency of the United States of America.
Let's go to the question of policy distinctions between Clinton and Trump. Clinton hasn't articulated much in policy, but she leaves a literally a body count of policy victims around the world, and a million cages, perhaps, of her involvement in policy domestically, with people trapped in those cages for years and decades. Donald Trump has said a number of things which are not exactly accurately presented in the media, by the way, as distasteful as the invocation of some of the concepts behind things like let's keep Muslims out until the government can figure out who's who, things like that. He has expressed ideas that are characterized as Islamophobic, anti-immigrant, and racist. Hillary Clinton has introduced policies that are facially and essentially those things. There are more dead Muslims around the world as a consequence of just, say, the Iraq War alone, let alone Libya, Syria, and others. as a consequence of Hillary Clinton's active involvement. And there are, among the immigrants forced to come to the United States, those in Honduras who were fleeing the right-wing dictatorship that she helped to install, as well as the refugees from Mexico who fled the consequences of NAFTA, the destruction of peasant farming and small business, et cetera, et cetera. Why is that not making the discussion, say, on CNN?
Well, I think I've given my explanation for why the media refused to discuss substantive policy issues, and that is because it serves the interests of the status quo, which is the current U.S. deep state power configuration. However, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts calls the U.S. media the U.S. prostitutes, and I like that. The fact of the matter is that whatever Donald Trump has said that is offensive, and he said a lot that is offensive, the bottom line is that what Hillary Clinton has done is most offensive to me.
And for some reason, none of that, and well, the reason you specify, none of that is percolating. It might be useful to listeners to maybe do a quick outline of both the deep state configuration that existed, say, 50 years ago or two generations ago, and that which exists now, and maybe at the point of, transition. What interests are being represented? Who are some of the players?
I think, of course, more research needs to be done, but some research that has already been done looked at the situation in the U.S. right at the threshold of the 2008, the threshold of the aftermath of the 2008 so-called economic crisis. And basically, you saw a changing of the guard, as it were, or maybe a shift of the chairs on the Titanic, however you might want to describe it. But the occupants of those chairs was beginning to change at that point. I believe what has happened in the U.S. is extremely similar to what happened in the Soviet Union / Russia at the time of the ushering out of Gorbachev and the ushering in of the known alcoholic Boris Yeltsin. And so basically all of the parastatals and the state-owned enterprises in what used to be the Soviet Union were by various nefarious means obtained by a small group of people. 10 of the 11 oligarchs that were created were also just happened to be Israeli passport holders. And so that little bit of information, I think, is important to understanding the fleecing of the U.S. taxpayer that is taking place now.
And it seems like going back to the earlier period, that there was a change in terms of the elites here that took place, say, in Germany in 1989 as well, and that maybe we're seeing fought out in this election. And the changing of the guard was from industrial and or productive capital, however you characterize it, and finance capital. That we saw that certainly at the end of the 70s and early beginning of the early 80s, and then again with the savings and loan situation at the end of the 1980s. And we saw also the same phenomenon take place in Germany as Germany was being reunified, where industrial capital was looking at Russia saying, oh, wow, let's go in there and partner with those guys and make a lot of money. And finance capital said, no, we're going to take it down and loot it. That's kind of what happened in the United States. Repeal of Glass-Steagall and all of that stuff allowed them to really consolidate their power and make the last grab that resulted in the collapse in 2007, 2008, and then a further looting under Obama.
I think when I first met Mike Rupert in about very early 2001, or maybe it was even late 2000, after the 2000 presidential election. And I told him at that time that our government was controlled by a criminal cabal. And little did I know at that time how criminal it would become.
Yeah, let's see. You had within a year and a half, certainly within 2 years of late 2000, the vote on Iraq and the crime that had been ongoing since 1990, 1991, but took an entirely new character on. And since then, there has been wars everywhere. The war in Afghanistan, the war on Iraq, the war on Libya, the war on Syria, the war on Yemen, the war in Somalia, the war on Sudan, the war continuing and accelerating in DR Congo, the taking of Cote d'Ivoire, the reacquisition of Mali by France, a whole bunch more.
Well, the fact of the matter is that President Obama is just as culpable as all of the rest of the string of presidents, and in fact, even more so, I believe. And I agree with Glenn Ford, who says that President Obama became or has become the facilitator of evils. It's not exactly what he said,
the more effective, the more effective evil.
That's the spirit in which he said it. And I absolutely, totally agree. And so, you know, we don't, the last thing we need to do is add a President Clinton, or I should say another President Clinton, to the list of war criminals. It's a high time that the people of the United States stop boiling their water, stop being afraid of their drinking water and their crumbling infrastructure, and actually invest their vote in someone who, at least in terms of the rhetoric, says that the focus needs to be put back on them.
Former six-term Democratic congressional member from Georgia, Cynthia McKinney, who was also the 2008 Green Party presidential nominee. And now some election commentary from imprisoned journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Theater of the absurd. When I was a young panther, a tiny, bald, blue-eyed Frenchman came to visit the national headquarters in Berkeley, California. David Hilliard, the chief of staff of the Black Panther Party, greeted him briefly, then handed him off to me to escort him around the offices there so he could meet other Panthers. The Frenchman's name was Jean Genet, but I had no idea what that meant. David gave me a slender book with the title The Blacks on its cover, and the name Jean Genet listed as the playwright. I turned to the back cover to learn more. It described the play The Blacks as an example of what was called the theater of the absurd. I thought of that description again as I watched last week's clumsy efforts by two white American politicians, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, to downgrade each other as to who is the bigger racist. It looks like two school kids shouting at each other over the sandbox, racist, bigot, am not, R2. The only thing missing here is the ultimate insult, your mother, but maybe that's coming. What could be more ridiculous? The truth is, white Americans have sculpted and supported an edifice of utter separation for centuries. And today, we still dwell in two very different worlds and headspaces, one of privilege and another of privation. But as we witness the decay of capitalism, its utter dog-eat-dog ruthlessness, we see that racism is ultimately a word, a thing, a toy to toss around at election time and to forget the day after. Neither politician has a solution, for it is bigger and deeper and realer than the both of them. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.